Future-Proof Extra from Newstalk.
Now, humans have an instinctive fear of large cats, bears, crocodiles, and that sort of makes sense. But why are we afraid of spiders, snakes, or insects? Well, it probably comes down to one of evolution's great levelers, venom. So what exactly is venom? How does it work? And how can we use the power of venom for good? Well, John Dunbar is from the School of Natural Sciences at the Ryan Institution in UI Galway. He joins me now. John, what is a venom?
So venom is a toxic secretion that's produced in the glands of some animals, and it's delivered through a mechanism into another animal, typically prey, but has evolved to be useful in defence against predators. So it actually has to typically cause a wound to get inside. In some cases, like spitting cobras, they can actually spray the venom straight into the eyes. So, and that's one of the
spitting cobras. Is that what they do?
Yeah, in addition to biting you or biting their prey, they are capable, if they feel threatened, spraying quite a few feet accurately into the eyes. I have a friend who was on one of the Komodo Islands doing a survey, and he was wearing a skull. He was at night time wearing a t-shirt with a skull on it, and he encountered a spitting cobra that actually sprayed, and the venom hit directly onto the eyes of the skull on his t-shirt. It's pretty cool.
That is a great story, isn't it?
But typically they have to get inside your system through causing a wound, and that's really the main separation between what's venomous and what's poisonous, because we refer to snakes and most venomous animals as purely venomous, whereas some, for example, insects, they can produce a poison, but it can actually, another arthropods produce a poison that even if it just rubs off your skin or if you lick it, it can get into your system and cause a lot of harm.
Right, okay, so there has to be some sort of barrier broken.
Exactly.
When we think about venom, the mechanisms for delivery are what? Stings?
Stings, fangs, barbs. Really interesting, there's a mammal, the slow loris, that actually produces like a venom secretion in the armpits.
And how does he catch it?
So what he does is if he feels threatened, his arms go up, which is a problem because they're cute little things and people think that they're actually, you know, they're putting arms up because they actually like your interaction with them.
Right.
But what they're getting ready to do is actually to lick their armpits, and then they can actually coat their fangs with the secretion, and actually when they bite you, that's
disgusting, John.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool. So what is that? Is that a type of a monkey?
Yeah, it's a primate. So it's actually it's not too distantly related from us. Like,
that's kind of a mad mechanism to develop, isn't it? I'm going to have poison under my armpit that I'll lick to coat my fangs so that I don't use it all the time. So, like, am I right in saying most poison is not delivered that? It is in a reservoir close to the point of breaking, or is it really varied?
Yeah, so some poisons can be sprayed, you can inhale it, and so on. So really, if you try and think of it in the sense that venom, the molecules are much bigger to get past the barriers.
Right.
Where poison are much smaller and they can, you know,
they can get through skin or so on.
Right. Yeah, very easily.
So, why are venoms so powerful? Like, because they are. We're talking about tiny amounts of these materials can cause catastrophic effects, right?
Absolutely. So, you have to think of it in evolutionary timescale. There's been hundreds of millions of years for most venoms to actually refine itself. So, when they initially become selected as a toxin, typically it's to do with prey acquisition, and when they're swallowing prey and stuff, whatever comes in close contact, there's a natural selection pressure for, if it gets slightly more toxic, it's much more useful. And
right.
Then over millions of years, that becomes more refined, and suddenly you start to see how, you know, the different kind of toxins become extremely potent.
Mm. If you have that amount of poison, is that because do these animals store this venom for specific prey, or is it sort of this poison that they carry is going to take out anything they come across?
No, really it becomes typically prey specific. So when you have, for example, some animals that feed on a certain type, they can actually select toxins that would be geared towards taking these down.
So they have like more than one toxin available to them?
Absolutely. So if you take classic example, snakes. So some snakes could have maybe a couple of hundred different types of toxins within a drop of venom.
What?
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, it's probably only a small handful of those that are actually responsible for the most pathology. But they do, they're very rich in different types of toxins.
That's crazy. Yeah. And so, like, I mean, so do they then get these toxins inside the body all at the same time, or do they like select from a drawer, so to speak?
No, nope, all at the same time. Yeah.
Okay.
No, it does still depend.
So they don't go, oh, here comes a bear, I'll take out my bear.
No.
Okay.
No, but there is. There are some species that have been shown to optimize their venom in the sense. So if they feel, say for example, if they have recently used their venom, for example, if they defended themselves within a few days or acquired prey, well, if they're going to hunt or if they feel threatened by another prey, they're aware that they haven't really fully replenished their venom, so they're very selective in how much they use. So
right.
For example, centipedes have been observed to once use up their venom, takes time for the venom to replenish, remember, maybe up to 6 weeks. So if they're going to attack prey, they will only take on small prey recently after using the venom.
Right.
Whereas if it's been a couple of months since they've eaten, they have a fully replenished sac and they can actually take on larger prey.
Is it true that there are some venoms that you could swallow and there'd be no problem, but if they break your skin or they enter a different way, they're deadly?
Absolutely. So think of venom as like a little shot glass. If you're thinking in terms of snakes, which will produce a lot of venom, think of it as a shot glass of protein.
Right.
Just protein. And you imagine, when you eat your food, you eat different types of proteins, whether it's a burger, a steak, a chop,
yeah.
And your digestive enzymes just, you know, break that down completely into amino acid forms and stuff. So venom, once it gets past your esophagus down into your stomach, it's no chance. Your stomach enzymes are going to just break that down. The thing is, because this is a real thing in a lot of countries where it's like you can go into an actual, you know, restaurant and order a shot of venom and drink it.
Really?
And there's some cultures where they, it's like a test of manhood.
Right, thing. Okay.
So, but really what you want to do is, like, you know, you want to drink that knowing that you don't have any cuts in your gums, down your esophagus, because if it gets in past the lining, you're in trouble.
Right, okay. Do we know where the first venomous animals came from? As a mechanism, did it come from one common ancestor?
So venom is known to evolve multiple times, but they do go right back to really primitive animals. Jellyfish have them and so on. You've got sponges that actually have venom. And, you know, and then you've got really early arthropods. So arthropods are on land hundreds of millions of years. And there's been numerous radiations of venom systems amongst different animals.
Why do we not see it very common in mammals? We don't see mammals with venom very often. Why is that?
I don't know, actually. Yeah, I don't know.
Hmm. Someone has texted in saying, is it true that daddy long legs have very strong venom?
No, referring to daddy long legs as the harvestman spider, they don't even have venom. They're actually not even a true spider. They don't have a venom gland.
What is this fella in here you brought in?
So that's actually the focus of my research. This is a false widow spider.
Ah, okay. So false widow spider makes me think this is a safe spider to handle, is it? I'm not going to handle
I'm not going to take about losing them in your studio now. But like, really, I can tell you that.
Describe what he looks like.
So it's a little small spider. It's got a big bulbous abdomen. So they're usually kind of dark brownish, almost black color.
Yeah.
A big bulbous abdomen, and the whole body kind of would look about the size of maybe something like, you know, a peanut M&M type of size.
Yeah, that's a good example, yeah.
And then it's got eight legs protruding from there. They're quite a pretty spider, I think. They've got this really nice cream crescent moving around the front. You can see there around the front of the abdomen.
Now, people know the black widow spider, a very dangerous spider. Yeah. This spider, the false black widow, is it venomous and why are you studying it?
Well, that's the thing. Like, even if you look at the black widow, it has such a notorious reputation. But in fact, like, the majority of people who are bitten by one probably wouldn't even need to go to see a doctor.
Really?
They have a potent neurotoxin called alpha-latrotoxin, and this targets the nervous system of vertebrates, and it basically interferes with the communication from the nerve cells to the muscle cells, and it could subsequently lead to neuromuscular paralysis. And that, in kind of most people, that could actually just end up making it feel sick. Some of the muscles aren't really functioning. Right. It doesn't mean you're going to literally just become paralyzed.
Right.
And that has killed a few people over the years when you're dealing with the black widows. But actually, not every year somebody dies from it. It's actually quite rare even for black widows.
And why are you studying this guy?
So the false widow spider is really interesting because it's called the false widow spider, it's immediately associated with black widows. Now, it's not to say it's not related to it. It is distantly related to it. But it suddenly appeared in Ireland 20 years ago. And we believe that it likely came from the Madeira Islands, Canary Islands, probably...
People on their holliers.
Yeah, stuff like that. You know, over years, even, you know, banana imports and stuff like that.
Right.
Maybe garden centre imports. And for some reason, it came here and was reported 20 years ago, and nobody's actually done anything since. Now, in the UK, it's present there over 100 years, but people have started in the last decade or so complaining of sightings and actually being bitten by them with an extensive range of symptoms, everything from death to... I was bitten by one of these spiders and my arm fell off. And nobody's actually investigated it. The media are having a field day with this, and so we decided to look this up.
You're also doing a paper that looked at sort of necrotic skin wounds after a bite, and this is sort of like where cells die, right? Tell us about that.
So what we were doing is we're trying to investigate. So there's this kind of conundrum where typical venom of spiders are not associated with necrosis, more associated with neurotoxicity. And so sometimes people do develop necrosis and it's unexplained. They confirm that they either have the spider with them or they identify the spider correctly. So we know the spider bit them, but we don't know why they produce these symptoms. So we wanted to look in addition to the potential necrotic compounds found in venoms, to how else, what are the other alternatives? And so we looked into, well, what happens after envenomation? How does the immune system respond to that? And as we when you look into the immunology of pathology and how the immune system reacts to pathogens, such as bacteria and viruses, there are actually, in recent years, described pathways. These are ways that the immune system can actually fight pathogens. And
just really briefly, is there a potential to harness that venom for medicine, do you think?
The venom, the harness for medicine, yes. There is actually some drugs on the market. So there's pit vipers that cause blood vessels to dilate. And this is actually used to prevent stroke. That's on the market. There are cone snail venom products used. These block pro-nociceptive neurochemicals in the brain. And that's actually kind of repurposed and used as painkillers and so on.
It's a fascinating subject. I could talk about it all day, but for the moment, thanks very much for joining us. That is our guest, John Dunbar from NUI Galway.